Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey.
Is that good?
Wow.
Do you like that one?
Yeah, I did like it. It kind of had a little bit of a carnival theme or something. I don't know.
A little bit. It had something. I might have completely blanked and just went with what my gut said, which was just to say, hey,
right,
a million
right.
times, which is
all
fine.
Right.
Yeah,
remember carnivals and like group activities? Weren't those fun? Back in the day?
No, I don't have any memory before March 11th of 2020, trust
me. It's so weird. I was just thinking that the other day. I was talking to a friend, and I was like, God, Darren and I had a live show in, I think our last one was D.C., in
February 12th.
Was it February 12th?
It was the day that I met Julia Louis-Dreyfus, so I remember.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You do remember that. But doesn't that feel like years ago? Like, that feels like another lifetime ago. To me, it does, at least.
It was a different world then.
It was
totally
a different world altogether.
But happy to be in this world with you, my boy.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Always staying positive. Guys, okay, so before we get into the show, the murder, we typically have a drink of the week, and I, just before the show, was like, we haven't really, like, mixed up a martini in a long time, and Darren, I think... You know, I'm drinking coffee this week, I'll be completely honest with you. But next week, Darren, let's be sure to both get the ingredients we need, and we're going to make a martini together so it feels like we're back in the studio. What do you think?
Honestly, I would love that. I mean, I have been drinking, so to be fair, I mixed up a little gin and tonic for myself, but it's not that great. My mom got me into gin and tonics, but I just like, yeah. I'm trying to overload my system so I get used to the taste. So that I can be a gin and tonic, or I can be a G&T girl. You know what I mean? I like vodka soda, but it's like, it is kind of boring. And Darren Karp isn't
it
boring.
Is. No, it is. You're right. You need a little something in there to match.
A little spice. And I feel like a G&T would provide that. And so it's an homage to my mother, who's a G&T fan. So shout out to her.
Very nice. I'll touch base with Gina, the staff boozer, and Matt, the bartender, for that matter, and just see what we can come up with. Something super simple. If you have the time, we can run out and get the ingredients before next week's episode, and we'll make it on the show. And we'll try to do that as often as possible.
I love that.
Because, by the way, let's be honest, there's a budget for this stuff when we're in the studio, and there's not really now. And I'm not trying to go out here and be spending hundreds of dollars on... you know, alcohol every week. Let's be
honest.
Sweetie,
it's called boxed wine.
I will
pay for some boxed wine for you.
I still have my 19 Crimes Cali Red from Snoop Dogg sitting here. That wine. So I need to be drinking that too.
Yeah, you need to be guzzling that shit.
Guzzling it. All right, well, let's get into the show then. And we'll have drinks for next week's episode so you guys can drink along with us responsibly.
That sounds great. Why don't you kick off the case this week, Johnny boy?
Yes, let's do it. So we're going to talk about Michelle Notek. I hope that's the pronunciation of her last name. But she
It's like Knife.
Knife, right, exactly. It's K-N-O-T-E-K, Knife. Known as Shelley to her friends and family, Michelle Konotek's father left her alcoholic mother when she was a little girl and took the kids with him. Michelle's mom got together with another alcoholic and lived on Skid Row until her boyfriend killed her in a motel room. So we're going right off the bat here. That's according to an investigator on Snapped, by the way. Michelle was 5 years old at the time, old enough to have strong memories of her mom, according to a cousin. I always wonder about that, too. You know, like, we have so many cases that involve murders of parents and young children. And it's like, I wonder what age it is for most people where they, like, can remember or can't remember some of this stuff. You know, it sounds like she did.
I've had, like, if I think back to my earliest memory, and this isn't a lot of people, but my earliest memory that I can think of is actually from my crib.
Me too.
It's not like overly detailed, but I can remember standing up in my crib when there was a thunderstorm happening, like crying for my parents.
Aww.
I know, because I'm not that brave when I was a little girl.
Because you're a baby.
I was a baby.
What's going on out there?
But I don't know, like... there's no imagery of my parents there. And, like, I can't remember, like, watching them until maybe I was probably around 5 or 6. So, you know, but you know what? Something that I've learned, especially because all the baby has been happening in quarantine, is that kids really pick up on a lot. And they pick up on a lot, you know, subconsciously. And so for her to be old enough at 5 to have strong memories of her mom is not shocking to me at all.
Yeah, that's true, too. I have similar memories like that. And I remember telling my mom, like, describing something to her once. I was like, where did we live where this big TV had these, like, lights around it? And she was like, how on earth do you remember that? That was literally when you were less than 2 years old. And I was like, what? And I remember watching The Price is Right on it. Like, I thought I was way older.
Well, how could you forget that? I mean, obviously.
I know. Bob Barker, love him. He's still around, right? He's, like, old. Okay, anyway.
Yes. Keep going with this horrible murder, please.
Yes. Anyway, Michelle's cousin called her behavior, quote, consistently manipulative, while the lead investigator said that Michelle had a, quote, tendency to develop stories in order to get what she wanted, including accusing people in her family of raping her or stealing from her. There's been a lot of that lately in these episodes. It's never a good thing. A cousin said, quote, she accused people out of our family of raping her, of stealing stuff from her. None of this was true, end quote. Michelle didn't like school and didn't like authority figures. Who does? With fiery red hair, Michelle's aunt said that she grew up into a strikingly beautiful young woman. And after high school, Michelle worked odd jobs and hooked up with a series of men, having 2 daughters with 2 different guys. While Michelle didn't fulfill her dream of becoming a nurse like her grandma and aunts, her life had taken a turn for the better when she began working in the field as a home caregiver for the sick and elderly or nursing homes, which means...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have a certain level of empathy and compassion to take on a job like that.
Well, and sometimes, you know, and listen, we're getting the start of this case, and I'm not here to, like, therapize anyone, but sometimes people who have, you know, certainly alcoholic parents or something where it's a troubled childhood, and they might become troubled themselves, you know, and it has to do a lot of security and feeling insecure in your own skin because you've had a lot of abandonment over the years when you were a child, but when you're sort of asked to take care of something other than yourself, you know, working in nursing homes as a home caregiver, sometimes that really helps you get the confidence in yourself that you need. You know, when the focus isn't on you, it can really empower people. And so it's nice to see Michelle take this turn.
That's a really good point. Take a drink of your G&T.
My G&T.
So she also met a Vietnam vet named David Notek, who was rebounding from a failed relationship when he met her in 1982. A forensic psychologist told Snap that when he hooked up with Michelle, he must have felt like he'd struck gold because she seemed to be, quote, a pretty good catch, and she was really affectionate towards him. The two married in 1989, and Michelle brought her 2 daughters to settle down in David's hometown in Raymond, Washington, where they lived in a small rental house. Raymond is a small town of 3,000.
Wow.
That's not that many. 2 hours south of Seattle. So shout out to anyone listening from Raymond, Washington.
I'm curious if we have any listeners in Raymond, Washington. Please let us know.
I was going to say, I feel like I always get a tweet like every couple weeks. It's like, oh my God, this week's show
right,
happened down the street.
Yeah. Well, Michelle mostly stayed home with the kids while David worked construction, and they took in Michelle's 12-year-old nephew, Shane Watson. Shane's father was Michelle's little brother, to give you some context there. And Shane had been getting into some trouble while living with his grandparents. Michelle's cousin said, quote, Shane's father was in a motorcycle gang, and he was in and out of prison virtually his entire life. Shane, in his early years, was raised by a lot of different people. Obviously, not having solid stability when you were younger can really... really fuck you up adulthood. Yeah. Now, everyone in the family thought it would be best for Shane to get out of this environment and go live with Michelle and David. And David treated him like the son he never had, spending time with him and teaching him how to surf. So things just seemed to be turning around here. And the no-tech house became even busier when not only did David and Michelle have a baby girl, and we're still in 1989, the same year they got married, by the way, but they also let Michelle's hairdresser turned friend, Kathy Loreno, move in. So they're just letting everyone fucking move into this house at this point.
Yeah.
I can't tell if this is a disaster or a good thing, but I can already say if we're covering this on Martinis and Murder, it is probably going to be a disaster. Forensic psychologist told Snap that Kathy was depressed after a breakup, and Michelle supported her and helped boost her self-esteem. When Kathy couldn't pay her rent, Michelle offered her room and board in exchange for helping watch the kids. So at least there's some sort of a healthy exchange, and she's helping out where she can, and the arrangement appeared to be working. But it was crowded, so Michelle and David moved the family to a home on 5 acres, further out in the sticks from their 3,000 small town. And their new home was described as a quaint, gingerbread-like farmhouse. And 2 years after moving in with the no-techs, Kathy Loreno had recovered from her breakup and made a new boyfriend, who was a truck driver. In a spur-of-the-moment decision, Kathy took off with him in California, according to the no-techs. Kathy seems to just be, you know, moving along here. Jesus.
Yeah, well, but Kathy hadn't told her family, which, of course, they thought was weird. A journalist told Snap, quote, they couldn't understand why she hadn't let them know where she was or what she was doing. So Kathy's mom reported her missing in 1994. The family hadn't heard from her in over a year, possibly even two or three. The lead investigator said, quote, it was probably 89-90 where the financial records for Kathy stopped, where she no longer had an income, was no longer reporting anything through the IRS, end quote.
So you're saying that the last year that they probably, the financial records stopped in 1990?
1990, that's okay. Right. Thank
Just
you.
Just making sure. Just making
1990?
Sure.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. By the way, we definitely need to get merch with that, like, on it sometime in the near future.
100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, investigators stopped by Kathy's last known address, the no-techs. According to a lieutenant, Michelle said, quote, oh, Kathy's fine. She's been around. I haven't heard from her in a while, but, you know, last I heard, she was out in California, end quote. By the way, this sounds like something that would happen with you. Like, you're always in California, and I'm sure if, like, you just went missing, I would just say the same thing. Because I'm like, Darren's been
you
in California.
And Matt. Like, oh, yeah. I don't know.
Right, exactly. Well, Michelle also showed deputies postcards and letters from Kathy that had been postmarked from across the country. She was moving around a lot with her trucker boyfriend. Investigators had no reports or evidence of anything out of the ordinary, and with the postcards, they let the matter drop. But weirdly, Kathy wasn't the only one who went missing from the no-tech household. Michelle reported that her nephew Shane had gone missing in 1993. By this point... I know. By this point, Shane was 17 years old, and he'd been with the family for nearly 6 years. Soon after he was reported as a runaway, Michelle made a follow-up report saying that he'd made contact. Turns out he'd gone off to Alaska and landed a job. It wasn't an uncommon thing for a 17-year-old to do in Raymond, Washington, which, of course, was a base for Alaska fishermen. You know, that general region of the country, that's kind of something that happens up there. But nonetheless...
But like, two people now kind of, like, not... It's just a little weird that, like, why wouldn't Shane tell them? Just be like, hey, I'm going to go to Alaska. Like, okay, problem solved. Like,
it just, it has weird, like, little things like Mara Murray, you know, like running off to the mountains. Like, why is she there? Yeah.
Well, years passed without anyone hearing from Kathy or Shane, but in 2001, Michelle's oldest daughter, Nikki, who is now 26, contacted the Pacific County Sheriff's Department. Now, a lieutenant told Snap, quote, she was extremely frightened. She did not want anybody seeing her or her mother having any knowledge whatsoever. Ooh, that is not a good sign.
That's not good, yeah.
You know, not having your mother wanting to know any of the information is usually a red flag. Now, she also refused to have her statement recorded out of nervousness, but what she said was shocking. Nikki said Michelle had tortured and murdered Kathy Loreno. Oh, now, I think where all of our heads were going was that Michelle had definitely murdered Kathy.
Definitely. At least
that was what the story had gone. But tortured adds a whole other layer to this. Now, she said her mom's seeming generosity in taking people into the house was just a trap. A forensic psychologist said, quote, "The most typical description is Jekyll and Hyde. They turn that spotlight of attention on you, and while it's on you, you feel just great, but then they take it away. That's how you start to get people under your control. They start to be willing to do just about anything to get to the good side of you and to avoid the bad side." I mean, I gotta say, sometimes people see this in relationships a lot,
especially with
domestic violence relationships where the guy beats the woman, you know, and then apologizes the next day and, you know, and then tries to do everything to, like, stay in his good graces. And I'm just using an example. I obviously know that women can be abusers as well, and it's not just in heterosexual relationships. I'm just using this common trope. Sure. Well, Kathy apparently had essentially been imprisoned and enslaved in this house. Now, the lead investigator said she was forced to crawl around the house nude and do housework. Nikki told deputies that her mom beat, tortured, and starved Kathy. A former employee of Kathy said, "Then when she did fix her something to eat, she'd make it look real nice on top. And then when you cut into it, then would be rotten with bugs in it. And Shelly would make her eat it, and she'd be so hungry that she would." Oh, my God, this is fucking horrible. Well, court documents describe the full extent of the treatment, and here's an excerpt of this. Notek and her husband, one, hit and slapped Loreno, including numerous blows to the head. Two, dragged her across the ground. Three, pulled her hair. Four, poisoned her. Five, forced her to submit to some bizarre treatments, in air quotes, such as bleach and salt to clean her wounds. Oh, my God. And ingesting salt and prescription medications. Six, forced her to live and to work outdoors in harsh weather conditions while minimally clothed or naked until she became hypothermic. Seven, starved her. And eight, as punishment if that wasn't enough, forced her to immerse herself in cold water or mud.
God, that is, like, horrendous.
That is some fucking nightmarish shit.
It doesn't get much worse than that, by the way.
I mean, you know, we talk about it a lot, but, like, and I'm not condoning murder, right? But, like, killing someone out of anger is one side of murder, but torturing someone...
Definitely.
Forever is a different type of psychosis. And
right,
it's just,
that intent is very different, for sure.
And, you know, Michelle had used similar tactics to dominate all three of her daughters and her nephew Shane, Nikki told investigators. The lead investigator said they'd beaten by cords and would be restricted as to what food they would be allowed to eat and when they would be allowed to eat. So she's fucking sick. And there were times where they were being locked in closets with nothing but a bucket as a bathroom.
That's terrible.
And according to the book, If You Tell, one of Michelle's former favorite forms of punishment was called wallowing, where she'd force the girls to strip naked and roll in the mud while she used a hose to spray them with cold water. And apparently, Michelle also made her kids stab Kathy with scissors, according to the forensic psychologist. So,
all right, well, now that we have all the most disturbing elements...
Yeah, on a darker note, it's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to fucking say. This might be one of the more horrible things we've ever heard. And listen, we've covered fucking Ed Gein on this goddamn podcast, but there's just something about, especially to your own fucking children, I just can't wrap my head around.
Yeah, and as for why anyone would put up with that kind of behavior, a psychologist said, quote, "She forced people to become dependent on her, to feel like they're powerless, even though they may still have the ability to escape, and they still have the ability to try to get themselves free. They don't feel like that," end quote. And that is so interesting, because that is such a mindset or narrative that occurs with so many people that may otherwise have the capabilities, you know, to have the, you know, like, you, if you have the physical strength and the mental fortitude, but you're convinced and sort of brainwashed into thinking that you simply cannot live without your abuser. It's a terrible place to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a little Stockholm syndrome-y. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that this is necessarily what's happening, but Stockholm syndrome is a full thing. I mean, you look at Elizabeth Smart when she got kidnapped, and, like, then they would go out in public, and it took her a long time to kind of, like,
realize
come
the
out
realities.
Of it, that these people were terrible and brainwashed her. So, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. A lot of people, it's not like they choose this life, but it's hard to know how you can get out of it too.
Absolutely. Michelle's husband, David, was a willing accomplice, according to Michelle's daughter, Nikki. Kathy did try to escape and once got a quarter mile down the road once, but was found by Michelle. terrible. The torture had left Kathy frail and psychologically wasted over time, which is what I was just saying. You kind of have to, you do have to have your sort of physical and mental wits about you to escape this type of stuff.
For sure.
Get ready for Snapped, Women Who Murder, the official Snapped podcast brought to you by Oxygen, the new network for crime. This podcast is what all OG true crime fans have been waiting for. Each episode features the audio from the original premiere episode of Snapped that aired on Oxygen. It's like you're watching an episode of Snapped, except it's in your ears, in your car, or at the gym. New episodes of Snapped, Women Who Murder will be released every Sunday. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Kathy lost 100 pounds and her hair and teeth fell out, according to documents, which also disclosed that near the end of Kathy's life, she, quote, could not walk or talk. One side of her face drooped, her vision had declined significantly, and she was covered in vomit, end quote.
Oh my God.
Nikki didn't know how Kathy had died, only that she mysteriously disappeared in 1991. According to a sheriff's lieutenant, Michelle dropped the kids off at a hotel and then went back and cleaned up with David. When the kids came back to the house, there was a huge fire burning in their property. An investigator said that David and Shelley told the kids they'd kill them and kill themselves if they ever said anything.
Well, that's also the threat there to keep them there. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it's hard to know how to escape.
Yeah, and it's hard to know how serious they are. Like,
exactly.
You know, even if you think it's a scare tactic, who knows if they ever would cross that line and then it's over. Nikki also wasn't exactly sure what had happened to Shane, but when Nikki was 21, she ran away from home and spent the next 5 years in hiding, building up her nerve to come forward and tell authorities what had happened. The sheriff's department checked records and found no reports of abuse. That, of course, does not mean it wasn't happening. There were just simply no reports of it.
Right.
The local school system's records on Michelle's daughters contained nothing unusual. The kids were involved in school activities like playing basketball. They went to school dances. Investigators couldn't verify Nikki's story and wanted to get a recorded statement from her, but she went back into hiding. And the fact that she wasn't cooperating further made them question the validity of the story. They had little to go on. Yeah, not to mention Michelle was admired in the community as a very giving person. So giving, in fact, that they took yet another boarder, Ron Woodsworth, in 2001.
Well, Ron, who was 57, had come to Raymond from San Francisco. He was devastated by a breakup with his long-term partner. He lost his job, and his home had actually been repossessed. So he had no friends except for Michelle, who had once looked after his elderly mother while working as a home health care provider. And investigators were obviously eager to speak with him. But as the lieutenant told Snap, quote, I went out to the house to talk to Ron, and he would see me and run. Before I'd get out of my car, he'd be off the porch and gone. This happened more than one time. All right, this is pretty suspicious. Now, 2 years went by, And in 2003, Michelle's oldest daughter, Nikki, came forward a second time. And this time, she was with her 24-year-old sister, Sammy, who had also run away from home. Now, Sammy backed up everything Nikki had told them, that they had basically grown up in this house of horrors, if you will. And the two sisters were super worried about their 14-year-old half-sister, who was still living at home. They said she was also being beaten and abused. Also, according to the sisters, shocker here, Ron Woodworth, guess what, had gone missing.
Oh,
and the next
God.
Day, on August 7th, deputies drove to the Notex house and took their youngest daughter into protective custody. Quote, she was extremely relieved that she was out of that place, end quote, said a lieutenant. I can only imagine her
For
face
sure.
when she realized she could break free. And Michelle cried and asked the deputies if they really thought that she was the type of person who would abuse her daughter. And the next day, Michelle sent David to the sheriff's department to get their daughter back. But investigators said that they'd like to ask him some questions. And once he was in the interrogation room, they confronted him with his stepdaughter's accusation. So this is where it gets heated here.
Yeah, exactly. So after initially denying any wrongdoing, he told investigators that Kathy had actually died by slipping in the shower. They had burned her body on the property because they were worried they'd be accused of something inappropriate. Oh,
totally.
You know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like
that's
burning
my first
a body.
Thought. Yeah, my right. first thought. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, David had spread her ashes in the ocean. He liked to surf, and so when he would go out there, he would take a couple buckets and dispose of it, a lieutenant told Snapped. Very disturbing as well. David also I'm just weird about, like, remains. I know that's, like, a weird thing to say, but, like, I don't know. This is going to sound super morbid and maybe depressing, but I always, like, wonder what's going to happen with, like, my body or my ashes. Like, I obviously hope that they will go wherever I want them to, but God only really knows. I don't know if that's like a
morbid
thing
to think.
Well,
don't put Matt in charge. I got to say that.
Well,
these things
listen,
won't end up anywhere except the trash.
No. Yeah, exactly. Well, David also admitted that Ron Woodworth was dead. And here's a snippet of the audio from David's questioning. The investigator says, your understanding of how he died is how. And David says, well, all I'll say is he's suicidal. He attempted his own life, and I believe he completed his wishes. After a few days of his death, I discovered the two medication bottles that Michelle had discovered missing in her bathroom. So that gives you a little bit of where David's head is during all this. David said he had buried Ron on the property as opposed to cremating him because there had been a burn ban in the area at the time of Ron's death. Quote, once he finally told us he was kind of relieved, said a lieutenant. Since David admitted to illegally disposing of two dead bodies, deputies placed him under arrest. Right, because
just,
you can't
so
just
I'm
go
just
do
confused,
that.
Though. Like, David decides to burn Kathy, which is totally fine because there's no ban in the area, but then doesn't
right.
decide to burn because there is a ban? Like,
apparently,
what?
Apparently. He's trying to follow the rules.
If two people are dying on your property, call the fucking cops and move out of
yeah.
there. So fuck you.
Well, they...
Sorry, but like,
passionate.
Jesus...
No, it's true. So they also now had enough evidence with David's admission and the daughter's statements to arrest Michelle for murder. Quote, she was overly dramatic about, you can't be doing this, you have to be kidding, said an investigator. On August 9th, 2003, deputies descended on the Notech property with a search warrant, cadaver dogs, and heavy machinery. Ron's body was right where David said it would be. Prosecutors allege that Michelle abused and tortured Ron to death, scalding his feet in boiling water, according
oh
to the Seattle
God.
Times. Yeah, investigators could find little more than a human bone the size of a quarter while searching for Kathy's remains, but they brought David to the property in hopes that he would help. To their surprise, he stopped near a small shed and said, quote, that's where I killed Shane.
What the
end quote.
Fuck? Okay, so...
I know.
Apparently, Michelle had ordered David to kill Shane after he threatened to tell authorities that she tortured Kathy to death. Quote, Michelle tells David that he's got to, for the sake of the family, that he's got to kill Shane, a forensic psychologist told Snapped. An investigator added he was a person that could be easily managed and controlled. I mean, I think that's why Michelle has chosen David. David had snuck up on Shane when he was working in the shed and shot him in the back of the head with a .22 rifle, and he burned the body just like he had Kathy's. Michelle was charged with two counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Kathy Loreno and Ronald Woodworth, according to the Seattle Times. David was charged with second-degree murder of the death of Shane, according to Snapped. And investigators dug up the whole yard but never found any more bone fragments. A forensic analysis of the fragment investigators did find confirmed that it was likely human but couldn't determine if it belonged to Kathy or Shane. I mean, at that point, it probably had just been so burned or minuscule was hard to tell, and the autopsy of Ron Woodward's body did not specifically lay out what caused his death. So, quote, there was a belief that there may have been hypothermia that contributed to the death, said a prosecutor. Meaning, despite what David and Michelle's daughter had said, the case against Michelle wasn't very strong, and prosecutors couldn't make the first-degree murder charges stick, so they changed the charges to second-degree murder and manslaughter, according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Now, inside the house, investigators found an undeveloped roll of film where there was a picture of Kathy crawling across the floor nude, just like her daughter Nikki had told deputies. In exchange for his cooperation, David pled guilty to second-degree murder, according to the Chinook Observer. And a journalist told Snap, quote, he confessed openly to the shooting of Shane, burning the two bodies. He was very humble and honest about it.
And that might be the most...
I'm not sure you could be humble about burning these bodies, but okay.
And that might be one of the most disturbing things about it. But anyway, Washington State has a spousal immunity provision, meaning it was unlikely that David would be able to testify against his wife in trial, which is like, why? Like, why? What is that? I just don't understand that. Anyway, in light of that, prosecutors hammered out a deal with Michelle's attorneys. In June 2004, she entered an Alford plea, according to the Seattle Times. According to the Times, quote, while maintaining her innocence, Michelle Notek's Alford pleas acknowledged that a jury would most likely have found her guilty of second-degree murder and manslaughter in the deaths of Kathy Loreno, 36, and Ronald Woodworth, 57, in the case if the case had gone to trial, end quote. Got through that. A deputy explained, quote, she stipulated that there was enough evidence to convict her, however, she did not plead guilty, end quote. And that's pretty much what an Alford plea is, by the way. And then the lead investigator said, quote, Shelley never took responsibility for anything, end quote. A deputy said Michelle Notek showed no remorse at all.
Because she's a fucking psychopath. Sorry.
The judge gave Michelle the maximum sentence allowed, 22 years. But, Darren, Michelle Notek is now 66, and she's scheduled to be released in June 2022.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, her daughters reached out to author Greg Olson to ask him to write a book, and he wrote the book If You Tell. According to the New York Post, the sisters, quote, asked him to write the book about their mother for one simple reason. They want to stop her from killing again. End quote.
Well, I gotta say, when she gets released, don't go stay at her house, people.
Right, exactly.
Horrible.
Yeah, that was, it's so weird, like, a lot of the, I mean, obviously the murder itself is tragic and terrible, but those details of the torture are just somewhat unbearable.
No, I know, and, like, when you look at pictures of her online, that's the thing, it's like, not, and, you know, a picture can say a lot, but it's just interesting to see this, what looks like a really sweet, you know, like, normal-ish woman, you know, just like, and just a horrible, horrible person.
I mean, if there's one thing we've learned on the show, it's that literally anybody can kill, no matter what they look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
You know what I mean? We should also take this second just to remind everybody, Michelle never pled guilty. She always maintained her innocence. And even through the Alford plea, you know, she maintained her innocence. So we have to respect that in this process.
Right.
Well, follow us on social media and let us know what you thought about this week's episode. Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren, Matt the Bartender, and join our Facebook group because there's lots of fun stuff going on in there.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously we want to end on a listener shout out as we always do. We actually only have one shout out this week, and it's positive and negative at the same time. And it goes to Matt the Bartender and his family member, Mary, who recently passed away. And that's actually why Matt isn't here with us today. We didn't make fun of Matt as much as we normally do because of this. And apparently she, Mary, who passed away, was obsessed with martinis and murder. And John, I believe Matt messaged you to say something today, right? You want to read that?
Yeah, he did. He messaged me today and he said, quote, I've known her since the second grade. She was like a mom to me. She was just full of love for everyone, and she was legendary for being the best host, so generous it was crazy, constantly trying to give people gifts and making food for everyone. She was Maggie and Miles from Milkshakes and Magic, by the way. Favorite family member by far. She loved animals and always volunteered at animal shelters. She was married to my brother for 36 years. She had two children, Courtney and Jake. And as Darren Karen just mentioned, she was a huge fan of the show and would hope to meet us one day. And although that didn't happen, we send all of our love to Matt and his family in this probably very tragic time for them.
Yeah, and we're thinking of you. We're thinking of you, yeah. Mary. And honestly, like, if you're getting a seal of approval from Maggie and Miles, the fact that you fucking volunteer at animal shelters, that's all I need to know about you to know that you're a good person.
That's true. Yeah, and I've heard Matt talk about her before, so I'm really sad for Matt, but
me too.
You know what? Life goes on, and hopefully we can continue making fun episodes in Mary's honor, if nothing else, right, Darren?
Absolutely. So we're dedicating this episode to Mary, Martinis, and Murder, Matt, Miles, Maggie, a lot of M's.
Lots of M's, but yeah, lots of M's.
The M for today goes to Mary, so Mary, we're thinking of you, and thank you for always listening to us. We love you. And everyone, that's it for our case this week. We'll be back on Thursday with another shot for me and John.
Yeah.
Matt may or may not be back this week, but, you know, I'm not usually want to say this, but if you guys could send nice messages to Matt, we would all really appreciate it, because we're all very much so thinking of him at this time.
Good idea. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.